I'm looking around. I'm not seeing any.
Yes. So the offices are kind of empty.
They're pretty empty.
Yeah, and I walked in. I was like, "That's it? That's all the guys we have?"
Yeah. Right. Because it turns out that on most days, most of our guys also don't show up. It seems like there's a lot of people missing out there that are not women. I don't know what that's about, but there's also a lot of women missing.
So I'm forced to do both hours with John. That's really the biggest downside of a day without women. So I want to talk about some of the upsides in a second. We do have, of course, an enormous show for you guys. We will talk about how the Republican Party has laid a couple of bear traps for all of us. In one of the stories you'll see, the bottom 90% get a tax cut of $0. The top 0.1% get an average tax cut of $200,000.
That's a spoiler.
It is, but you're gonna have to see the details, and it gives you a good sense of why they wanted to kill Obamacare in the first place. And then the second hour is gonna be a little funky, a little different. I'm throwing a couple of things in there that'll mix it up a little bit.
Yeah,
mix it up a little bit, okay? Yeah. And Samuel Jackson goes after Ben Carson.
He's been on fire lately.
Yeah, and that gets into the issue of what are black people allowed to call each other?
I'm assuming we're not judging.
No.
We're going to lay down very strict guidelines.
No, as usual, I will be the ultimate judge.
Okay.
Since I'm raceless, I can enter the fray and make all these decisions. Okay, that's the first time I've used that word or that phrasing. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it.
Raceless?
Yeah.
You don't see color in the mirror.
Yeah, I see brown olive kind of thing, whatever mm-hmm. that is. Okay, mm-hmm. Olive. Why do they say olive? Or do we look green? I don't get it.
I don't get it.
Okay, olives are either really green or really black.
Maybe there are other kinds of olives we're not familiar with. I don't know a lot about vegetables. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie.
Anyways, okay. All right, so big show ahead for you guys. Let's start on International Women's Day, okay? Let me do a little shout out here, okay? It's International Women's Day. It's a day without women. That's why we're wearing these red TYT shirts in honor of the women who work here. Now, they are at the protests and they're covering them today. And check out facebook.com/theyoungturks for all the live coverage. But they're not here doing their regular jobs. And we're hurt, dog. Don't ask us if we're all right. Mm-hmm. So now Irene is our executive producer, and she forbid me from going through all the women that work here and all the incredibly important jobs and putting up their pictures and names, because she said it would look like an in memoriam.
And they're not dead.
They're not dead. They're just not here for one day. But our executive producer,
all of the main show producers, basically.
That's right. So today,
I mean, Arthur, I guess. Guy,
today, me and John and Jared are like, how are we going to put this show together? Anyway.
Let alone that. Well, you'll get into it. You'll
right.
Get it.
Yeah. So Roofer's not here. She puts the show together day to day. So look at this. We already have pictures. They're out there covering this. Obviously, Casper.
Damn.
And then we've got a lot of hosts out there.
Sandra joining up in the back. I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's Christian.
Producers, editors.
Hosts.
Okay. And that's just the LA crew. Our chief marketing officer is in DC, and she's doing hashtag Day Without a Woman and covering the DC protest. And then we've got, I'm not supposed to say all the names. Anyway, we've got the New York crew.
She's in New York by herself, which is a little bit sad, but I'm glad that she's participating.
Yeah.
She's involved.
So I had three moments today where I was like, okay, I got to schedule a really important business meeting. So I would normally call our chief of staff, Leah. And I was like, I can't call her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, that's all right. I got to talk to Irina about the show. God, can't call her. Right? Yeah. And then I need to talk to Praveen, our chief marketing officer, about two very important upcoming projects coming up. God, can't talk to her. So this is the production meeting, such as it is, with all the empty seats. And then we're goofing around because there's no women. All we do is sit there and goof around. We didn't even bring in a mirror to help.
We did get far less done than we normally do, to be fair.
Yeah.
Look how empty it is.
It turns out we employ a lot of women. There's a lot of empty seats there.
This is like after the bombs fall.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those movies. That's right.
It's post-apocalyptic.
Like Leftovers or Leftover on HBO.
Yeah.
Where we're the ones left behind. Or maybe they just took over.
He's one of our like tech like consultant like experts. And he had to do that because we needed him to.
Okay. Anyways, so you get the point. I go on and on about all the important things that that are carried here at TYT by the women of TYT shop. Shop TYT, the administrative office, HR, I mean it goes on and on. So but I did want to do one other thing for International Women's Day, and it was to honor women in our lives. Now, I don't want to get into all the wonderful women in my life, like my mom and my sister, super strong role models for me and my family, my great aunt, my wife has been a rock for me, yada, yada, right? But I'm talking about in the context of work. So I have 1.5 quick examples. The half is my mom. Okay.
Wait, because, you just said.
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I didn't work under her, but she started her own business before I did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it was in home textiles. And it was, and I've given speeches about this. She's amazing. She's miraculous. No college degree because she didn't have an opportunity to do that when she was growing up in southeastern Turkey. And started a business anyway and made the best napkins in the world, which are in the White House. The Queen Elizabeth has them. Amazing, jeez. Amazing. So that's a very long story. But in the context of my career, which is really what's most important here.
That's what the day is about at right. The end of the day.
I just want to give a quick shout out to MJ Witt, who was my first boss in television. And anybody who's worked with MJ knows she's tough, okay? But she is incredibly loyal and taught me that as a manager and as a boss, that you should expect the best from the people who work for you. And at the same time, you have to deliver the best for them and make sure that in every way you look out for them, you take care of them, and not just in that job, but throughout your entire career. And MJ has been there for us, all the people who worked at Whammy TV down in Miami, including Ben and so many other friends throughout our entire careers. So she set a great example for me, and I learned from her strength and her wisdom. So I appreciate that, and I wanted to bring that out today.
Yeah. And my mom's great too. I'm just gonna say that, but yeah, we're gonna stay off some of the more cliched ones. I would like, I don't know, is this cliche? This is cliche adjacent, but I've always had, like I have a lot of close male friends, but I've always had a lot of really close female friends. And I do, it seems so cliche to say, but I really do feel like I learn more from them. And I don't mean like now, but I mean over the course of my life. And so they've been a great influence. But if we're talking about work, if I think back over the course of what I was doing before I ended up in this career field, in undergrad and in grad school, some of the most influential professors I had were women. So one of the female professors, who's actually Turkish, actually, when I was an undergrad, Aksan Bayogun, she used to start off all the classes with like, just talk about the political thing going on that you're most interested in. You'd have open dialogue and people would be arguing back and forth. It was like the first thing that I did that's sort of like this. And then I go to grad school and some of my, not really even favorite professors, but the professors who mattered the most to me, Bethany Albertson, Wendy Hunter, my dissertation supervisor, Tasha Philpott, like they didn't just get me interested in politics, because that's one thing. Lots of people are interested in politics and it can lead to some really shitty work in politics and really uninformed commentary in politics. But they taught me how to think about politics, the tools, the analytical tools, the methodological tools necessary to think about politics and to try to contribute something. And I would not have that if it wasn't for those professors.
You are forcing me to say one last quick shout out to Mrs. Rosenberg. I know this is borders on cliche too, but she was my fourth grade reading teacher, and I had just learned English. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the lowest remedial reading class, and she moved me up from that class to the very top. She skipped all the other ones to the top reading class by the end of fourth grade. And I said, Mrs. Rosenberg, I barely know English. She's like, no, Jenk, I believe in you. I think you're going to be really good at reading and talking. Thank you, Mrs. Rosenberg. I appreciate it.
She's like, I should have modulated that a little bit.
Okay. All right. So now, Trump's version of A Day Without a Woman. Let's
exactly,
do that.
Exactly. To his credit, Donald Trump did acknowledge that today is International Women's Day. He sent out a pair of tweets. He said this on International Women's Day, join me in honoring the critical role of women here in America and around the world. That's a very good tweet there. He also said this, I have tremendous respect for women and the many roles they serve that are vital to the fabric of our society and our economy, which is the right thing for him to say. Now, granted, he didn't acknowledge, as far as I've seen in any place, A Day Without Women, but he's acknowledging International Women's Day, which is more than I would have expected from him. But he brought up the respect thing. And it's one thing, it's a good thing to say you have respect for women. It's another thing, a harder thing, to actually live your life that way. And so Jared Jackson put together a few of his greatest hits in him demonstrating the level of respect that he actually has for women. And we're going to watch it now.
A pregnancy is never, it's a wonderful thing for the woman, it's a wonderful thing for the husband, it's certainly an inconvenience for a business.
You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
She's a disgusting pig, right?
Bimbo?
Well, that was a retweet, yeah, did I say that?
Many times.
Ooh, okay. Excuse me.
Nobody.
I mean,
not the most horrible thing. You know, again, politically, not the most. Over your life, Megan, you've been called a lot worse. Is that right? Wouldn't you say?
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no? As a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
And he went after me on the plane. Yeah, I'm going to go after. Believe me, she would not be my first choice, that I can tell you. Man.
Nobody.
You don't know. That would not be my first choice.
I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss.
Nobody.
And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy.
And all of the men, we're petrified to speak to women anymore. We may raise our voice. You know what? The women get it better than we do, folks. All right? They get it better than we do.
Yeah. I don't want to sound too much like a chauvinist, but when I come home and dinner's not ready, I go through the roof, okay?
She was the winner, and you know, she gained a massive amount of weight, and it was a real problem.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
Not only that, her attitude, and we had a real problem with her.
Man, J.R. Jackson. Nobody.
That's a great
best
job.
Senior producer in the business. You know who's better? Nobody.
Nobody. That was a good job. And look, that's just a little sampling of the video. Let's quickly go through some of his tweets. I mean, this was actually in the video. He retweeted this, Fox viewers give low marks to bimbo Megyn Kelly. We'll consider the programs. He just kept retweeting anytime somebody called her a bimbo. And then when called on it, and she was super like, oh, like, hey, call me a bimbo. Maybe that's a little bit messed up. He's like, oh, you've been called worse, I bet. He said this, Arianna Huffington is unattractive both inside and out. I fully understand why her former husband left her for a man. He made a good decision. Because she is so unattractive to him that she creates gay men. That's what he thinks about this woman. If Hillary Clinton can't satisfy her husband, what makes her think she can satisfy America?
Oh my God.
That wasn't 3 years ago when he was a young man of 66. That was during the campaign. He said this about sexual assaults in the military. Very understanding, very compassionate. 26,000 unreported sexual assaults in the military, only 238 convictions. What did these geniuses expect when they put men and women together? Well, obviously, they're going to get raped. Why are people acting surprised? Let's see. He said this. Talking about his own daughter, yeah, she's really something. And what a beauty, that one. If I weren't happily married and, you know, her father. Oy. That was last 2 years ago. Sorry, it was 2015. He said many things like that. He also said this, asked about women by New York Magazine. He said, you have to treat them like shit.
And nobody's got more respect for women than he does. Nobody.
You can't find anyone with more respect than things you have to treat like shit.
Believe me, nobody's got more respect, especially when he does this.
I moved in her like a bitch.
But to be fair, I think there he's calling himself a bitch, but I'm not sure.
That's right. Which is such a 40-year-old virgin move. Like, what does that mean? I moved on her like a bitch. Okay. There are hundreds of tweets that are brilliant. I just want to mention three others real quick. One is some guy tweeted him grabbing the Statue of Liberty by the genitals. And I was like, oh no, I can't unsee that. So I didn't want to subject you to that, but it was a little bit brilliant. And then there's dozens of these, but here's one on Bette Midler. While Bette Midler is an extremely unattractive woman, I refuse to say that because I always insist on being politically correct.
What's the problem with that? He didn't say it.
No,
he refused.
He literally does the thing I do kidding. Like when I kid around and go, I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He says it for real. Like, yeah. I'm not saying Bette Midler is extremely unattractive, except for the fact that I just did. But I'm not saying it because that would be politically incorrect.
Yeah, and I think about, like, especially today, this day of huge mass activism by women and their allies across the country. I mean, like, there's a lot of great role models, which is awesome. And there's a reason role models are so powerful is because young people, whichever group, in this case, women, can look up to that. And it can get them to feel comfortable, like, acting in a certain way, going into a certain role or career that they might not otherwise. But we'll never know, having a president who so clearly disdains women and believes that there's extremely limited roles for them in society. Maybe if they're a close blood relative, his favorite daughter, he'll treat them acceptably.
And attractive.
He'll still sexualize them, but at least he'll treat them nicely and let them be involved in the business. But otherwise, so dismissive and insulting. Imagine growing up as a young woman and hearing that coming out of the president. That has got to have a negative impact.
And finally, I know it's a random one, but I had forgotten it. And it just gives you a sense of how cheap and ugly he is. In that famous tape on the bus, he also talked about how he tried to basically buy off a married woman by buying her furniture. And so Matthew Dix is one of the guys who tweeted about it. He's like, oh, so how will you be honoring women today, Donald? Buying married women furniture in hopes of having sex with them, perhaps? And that's the one that he moved on like a bitch, and refuses advances, even though she could have gotten furniture out of it.
She could have gotten a couch.
Yeah, or maybe a
short-sighted.
You know, a nice leather recliner or something. But the reason I tell you that one is because that's how he sees women. You just buy them if they're attractive enough. You try to buy them because that's what they're for. And if they're not attractive, well, then they're good for nothing, not even business. So it's okay to think women are attractive. We're all sexual creatures, and it's okay for women to think guys are attractive, yada, yada. But you've got to be able to separate out that there are other facets to human beings.
Yes.
And certainly in the context of work, you can't mix those two things unless you're a really bad guy who doesn't respect women at all.
So he obviously he can't acknowledge that in women that he's interested in. But we've seen that the tapes of him being asked, like, what do you hope for your daughter? What's the best thing about your daughter? He can't say anything other than sexual stuff there, too. And it's not just that he sees women that way and he thinks that's how you get a woman, is to buy them. It's also that he knows he has to buy them. As rich as he is, as famous as he is, he knows he still has to give them an ottoman. Because they won't touch him otherwise. What a sad little man. He has to take them to IKEA. We get to take them to IKEA. What a sad bastard.
So at the end, we end with sad baby.
Baby. God. He once said, 12-year-old Paris Hilton, she walked into a room and he was like, who is that? I mean, I'm not into that. I've never been into that. I'm going to wait 10 years. But he couldn't help it. 12-year-old.
Believe me.
And remember the girl by the escalator? 10 years from now,
I'll be dating you.
I'll be dating you.
Nobody respects 12-year-old women more than him. Yeah. Nobody.
Believe me.
Okay, let's turn to something serious, a different area of serious politics. Over the past decade, we've seen funding for the IRS steadily being cut. And in the future, based on things we've heard Trump say, we know that we're likely to see even more of that. And those cuts have consequences. We've already seen those consequences. And it turns out that some extremely influential Americans love those consequences. So in this video, we're going to break them down. First, I want to show you the funding for the IRS. If we can bring up this chart, you see it's slowly getting steadily cut away. I mean, the thing is there that it's not that much money when you compare it to other parts of the budget. And when you realize that it is one of the few areas of government that brings in money, the idea that you should cut it to save money becomes somewhat ridiculous. So you see there that it's being inched down over the past few years. Now bring up this. It's going to be a brief little summary. You can pause it later on YouTube if you want. You're seeing there reduced resources and services. So 13,000 fewer employees, 12,000 of those the enforcement staff. Lowest individual and business audit levels in a decade. We're going to go into that. But at the same time, they also have to do far more. There's far more tax returns being filed. There are more important and necessary tax regulations, protections against fraud that they need to be in charge of. And so fewer people to do the work, more work needing to be done. And so we should we be surprised that you end up with a chart like this next one, where over the course of the past 10 years, you see the overall level of enforcement, the level of corporate audits going down, and especially audits for the rich, briefly nudging back up there, but then dropping down once again. Now let's put this in concrete terms. For large companies, audit rates fell by nearly 50%, declining from 17.8% back in 2012 to 9.5%. 50% in just 4 years of those audits. Thankfully, I'm sure companies are not doing any funny business with their taxes. So it's quite all right. And then the numbers for individuals also fell as well. And what it turns out is going to happen in the near future is under Trump's budget, the IRS would experience another 14.1% funding cut starting in October of this year. So the funding gets cut, the audits go down on corporations and rich individuals. But shit, it looks like there's gonna be more of that. Does Trump not know that?
Yeah. So let's break this down in a couple of different ways. Number one, this is not by accident, it's on purpose. So, and number two, yes, there are frustrating examples of Democrats who also help their donors. Dime a dozen, I get it, right? Mm-hmm. But look at what the Republican Party does on a mass scale. So why does all those charts on audits and enforcement dip in 2011? Because Republicans won landslide election results in, or had landslide election results in 2010 elections. So they, the 2011 Congress is the first Republican Congress, and they go, "That's it. We're not funding the IRS anymore. Our rich donors are going to have a bonanza, and they can cheat on their taxes all they like, and they're very unlikely to get caught." On an individual level, it's now down to 0.7% of people being audited. Okay, so if you are David Koch, you think I have a 99.3% chance that I'm not going to get audited. So I've got, what does he have? Is over $40 billion. So even if he fudges his taxes a little bit, he's going to save tens of millions of dollars. And very likely he has a 99.3% chance of getting away with it. If he wants to fudge him a lot, he can save hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps billions of dollars. Thank you very much, Republican Congress that I just bought. You gave me a great rate of return on my investment.
Free money.
Now, when you look at the corporation side, now if your chance of getting audited as a corporation is down to under 10%, you start to do math on that, and you have fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders, you almost have to break the law. Yeah. Okay. Now I know that they're not, by law, they're not supposed to. Obviously, that's the whole point. But remember, they never go to jail. They, even though corporations are human beings, no one ever goes to jail. So there's no actual consequences to any of the individuals who do this. In fact, they get bigger and bigger bonuses that year if the company makes more money. And if you think, hey, I only have about a 10% chance of getting audited. If I cheat on my taxes, I save billions of dollars a year. And you know, if I get audited once every 10 years, the penalties would have to be 10x for it to not be worth it.
And we know they're not. Even when it's not a mistake, but they actually break the law. Like if you launder money as a bank, for instance, if you dump a bunch of oil into the ocean, it's a tiny little penalty that you can just factor into the cost of doing business.
So if you're just talking about maximizing profits, which is the whole point of these corporations that we've built, now we've incentivized them to make sure they don't pay their taxes, because they will very likely get away with it. And even if they get caught at some point within those 10 years, it's still great business on their part to cheat on taxes. And it's not an accident. The corporations are the ones that funded the politicians. My conservative friends, you keep complaining about crony capitalism, and you keep complaining about corrupt politicians. You're 100% right about that. Who do you think corrupted them? It's right here in the numbers. The people who are getting rich off of their corruptions are the ones who paid them to be corrupt. And that leads us finally to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Now, what did Donald Trump say during the debates? He said, I bought all these guys before. I paid contributions, campaign contributions to them, and they did whatever I told them to do. And now that appealed to the right-wing voters. They're like, at least he's being honest about it. Yeah. And he hasn't been bought. He was the one doing the buying. That's not really any better.
No.
So that, remember, he avoided taxes. Was it 18 or 19 years?
I believe it was 18.
Okay, 18 straight years he didn't pay taxes. By the way, we think that was legal, but we know he never shows us any of his taxes, so it's impossible to know. But a guy who for two decades found a way to avoid taxes, of course doesn't believe that the rich and billionaires and multinational corporations should pay taxes. He just doesn't believe in it. So he's going to cut. And by the way, it destroys the deficit. Because every dollar spent into the IRS brings you many dollars back. It's the one part of government where you spend money and the government gets more money, not less money.
Yeah.
So if by cutting the IRS, they're not saving money. That's an absolute provable lie.
They're saving the rich money.
They're saving rich and multinational corporations and their donors money, and they're costing all the rest of us that money. And you know how much they cost us between 2008 and 2010? The difference between the taxes that were owed and the taxes that were not paid is $458 billion. And then they tell us that education for your kids, the American dream, is not practical and can't be done because Bernie Sanders' program to give free college education to your kids is $75 billion. $458 billion of taxes not paid by the rich. Well, that's fine, nothing we can do. $75 billion for your kids? Hell no, no way.
But we gotta save money, so we cut another billion from the IRS.
Which then costs us tens of billions of dollars. No, they're making choices, guys. And the choice is for the Republican Party, they love the rich. So the fact that that's not in everybody's head and as an absolute fact is unconscionable. The only reason it's not is because television sucks. And for decades now, television has refused to call it like it is. Look at where it is. Look at where the IRS gets cut. Look at where we stop getting revenue from those guys, from multinational corporations. Look at what multinational corporations did. They used to be 35% of the taxes paid. Now they're under 10% of the taxes paid for the overall taxes paid by all Americans.
And that is going to disappear if Trump gets his tax plan.
That's right.
10% is going to seem like some sort of socialist fantasy in a couple of years.
And television never tells you. Of course the Republicans are for the rich. The rich are who finance their elections. That's who put them into power in the first place. So the Democratic Party has 1,000 problems. But the Republican Party is absolutely clear, and at the national level, totally hopeless. They will never serve you, and if you think they're serving you, you've been had, you've been took. They're taken from your wallet and giving it to the rich donors. And the fact that you can't understand that now is, well, it's because you were just in the wrong media. I guess I hope nobody ever told you. Or if somebody told you, and you're a sucker, and you're like, oh, the Kochs have. And by the way, Soros and Bloomberg and the guys on the left too, they have $40 billion, they have $80 billion. But here's another 20 bucks for me. Here's another 200 bucks that I can't afford. Take my money, because God forbid the rich should pay taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, if they're ever going to learn the lesson, now I guess is the opportunity, because we already know. I mean, we broke it down as they were choosing their cabinet. Richest cabinet by far ever, American history, right now. And cutting out the middleman, where it used to be that Trump and people like him would have to buy politicians and hope that they do all of their bidding and give all these benefits to the rich. But now they can just order them themselves, and he can look around and he can give every one of his employees a gigantic tax cut. Let alone every member of his family is going to make millions upon millions of dollars every year as a result of the changes that he's pushing for right now. It's amazing that we have a system that allows them to do that.
Yep.
Okay, but that's not all the tax cuts they're going to be getting. We've got some more for you. any government program on the scale of something like the Affordable Care Act or the alternative that the Republicans are pushing for right now is at the end of the day about making choices. Who will benefit? Who will be hurt? Who will get subsidized? Who will have to do the subsidizing? And now with this alternative, we've got some stats that are going to show you exactly where those choices are heading. Who is going to benefit under the way things will soon be? Let's bring up this chart, and it's a lot of things. You can look them over if you want. Again, you can pause it if you want. But the biggest and most important number is there at the bottom. $594 billion. This is a chart of all of the effective tax cuts that will be created by getting rid of those portions of the Affordable Care Act. And that is the bill that we're now dealing with. $600 billion in tax cuts without them ever having to have any national debate about tax cuts, without ever having to have a debate in the Senate about tax cuts. They can simply repeal Obamacare and give a tax cut that would make George W. Bush blush in his worst days. And that money just gets flooded out there into the richest individuals.
So let me give you a sense of scale and context here. So the taxes are in this case, for this particular law, Affordable Care Act, a capital gains, dividend, and interest income for families with $250,000 or more. That's the lion's share of them. Now, the bottom 90% are totally not affected by that. I'll get to the final numbers on how this affects 90% of us in a second. And then the other one is the Medicare surtax. That's 0.9% extra for, again, families bringing above $250,000. So when you take those two, which is the lion's share of the tax cuts here, by ending Obamacare, as John pointed out to you, they're handing $600 billion to the richest people in America. And to the top 0.1% on average, they are going to get a tax cut that is near $200,000.
Every year.
Now, for the bottom 90% of us, that's 90% of the country.
Okay, well, what do we get?
What do we get? $0. The tax cuts are zero for us. They're not, hey, we'll see how it plans turns out, but it might actually be $27 or $127. No. It's $0.
Yeah.
So when they say the tax cuts are good for you, by you, they mean the top 10%, but actually, most of all, the top 0.1%. They don't mean you. You're not getting any tax cuts. Why do you think repealing Obamacare is their number one priority? But because they really hate it that 20 million people or extra people are insured? I mean, some of them are draconian, some of them are really bad guys, and maybe they go, I can't wait for them to get sick and die. No, generally speaking, they don't care. They don't care that you're going to get sick and die. Mm. They just want the money. I want the money. I want the $600 billion. And the top 0.1% on average make annually $3.75 million. They make nearly $4 million a year.
Those broke bastards. Give them a tax cut.
But they're going to get a $200,000 a year tax cut anyway. That's why they want to kill Obamacare. It doesn't have anything to do with healthcare. It has to do with greed is endless. And if they're getting taxed 0.9% more, no. You go die in the streets. I don't give a damn. I want my tax cut.
And of course, we're being way too nice to them, because when we say that you get a zero tax cut, you're not getting a zero tax cut. You are going to pay more for your health insurance in the very near future if this bill actually gets passed. So they get $200,000. You lose out countless thousands of dollars every single year. But we wanted to go a little bit broader here, because this is a chart. I'm going to show you in one second. Don't bring it up just yet. Very interesting, because we talk a lot about income inequality in this country. Very rarely do we have policies that have a clear goal in the opposite direction, income equality measures. But it turns out, for all of its other problems, and it does have many, the ACA was actually serving the function of a little bit of income equality, pushing in that direction. Let's bring up this chart. This is breaking down all Americans by income quintiles. And you're going to see there the change in your income because of the Affordable Care Act. So if you're in the bottom 10th percent, there's actually not quintiles, it's by tens. But anyway, in the bottom 10th, you're making effectively more than 7% more income per year. If you're in the second lowest, you're making 5%. It's not much, you're still the poorest Americans, but you're making a little bit more money. But the people above you, they're hurting. Look at that top 10th. They're losing 0.3% of their income. And that cannot be abided. It must be destroyed.
This is why they killed Obamacare, because they had to have their 0.3% extra. So yeah, it covers 20 million more people. Yes, their alternative now they say is, oh, you still have access to a doctor. If you can't afford it, that's your problem, not my problem. There's Republicans on TV today talking about how, well, why don't you just go to the emergency room? I can't go to the emergency room if I have cancer. That's not how it works. I die if I get cancer. But go to the emergency room bankruptcy. They're like, well, so what? My 0.3% tax cut for the top 10%. Nope, sorry, can't do it. Yeah. Can't do it. So this is, Obamacare was never about health care for the Republicans. It was always about greed.
It's about killing the subsidies for the poorest Americans. It seems crazy, but we've reached a point in America where Republicans will kill you for 0.3% of their income. They will watch you die and laugh so that they can get 0.3% more.
Now, when Alan Grayson said that, people said, oh my God, he's so extreme. But in this case, guys, it is literal. It is literal. Because if you don't have insurance and you get cancer, you can't keep going to the emergency room for treatment. I'm giving you one of hundreds of examples. And then you die. You do. That's how health works. If you don't have health, you die. So it's not a hyperbole. It's not a luxury. It's not. This is a matter of life and death. And they are saying, yes, we know, we know. And they are admitting it all over TV now.
Yeah.
There will be
millions of people. It's the old talking points again. The emergency room, that's what they used to say back before the ACA.
So they know that millions of people are going to lose their health insurance and not going to be covered. And by the way, we're not even talking about the bankruptcies that will be created.
Exactly. And not everyone will die, but some, their kids will lose out on college. Some will lose their businesses. Some will go bankrupt. Lives will be ruined. Many will die. 30,000-40,000 people every single year will die as a result of this repeal, but many other lives will be ruined. They just won't die along the way.
And all because the guys who make nearly $4 million a year had to have another $200,000 in tax cuts. You know, Jason Chaffetz, he talked about choices. Hey man, why don't you just grab an iPhone, not have an iPhone and just get pay for healthcare instead. Well, first of all, that's not how it works. And those two things are not equivalent. But second of all, you want to talk about choices? You guys, you Republicans just made the choice that instead of caring about the healthcare for the entire country, you're going to prioritize the richest people in the country and their tax cuts over the rest of all of us. So in the old days, they would have done in the dark of night and they idiots on TV wouldn't have told you anything at all. No stupid pundits would have treated them as honorable gentlemen with just different ideas on how to best do healthcare. Golly gee, what the effect it has on the rich? I'm not going to tell you that. Why? Because the guys who run the TV stations are fabulously rich. Of course, they're not going to tell you that. So now, though, you have the internet. Now you know. So if you reelect these guys who did this to your healthcare, to give tax cuts for the top 0.1%, well, it's all on you, man. Now that's a choice. And you're going to have to make that choice in upcoming elections.
Should probably take a first break.
Yes.
More to get to, though.
Okay, more on the healthcare bill and more on Jason Chaffetz and what a dick he is when we come back. All right, back on the Young Turks. Danny Newberry gave $27 to our journalism drive, and we appreciate that. That's at tytnetwork.com/go. And so to Rebecca Bates, $27. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Read some quick tweets for you guys. Bitchy Gay Guy says, so TYT Live is a giant sausage fest today. Sign me up.
I don't remember. Jesus Christ.
That's funny. Kiki Wellington says, so it's Mrs. Rosenberg we have to blame for Cenk's rants. Don't put that on her. Okay. The liberal mom says, I want to give a shout out to Anna. Even though I'm older, she's a role model for myself and others. She is, in fact, too strong.
Yeah.
All right.
It was really fast. So I meant to mention it during the first thing, but we were talking briefly about like what TYT is like without women. And like I was trying to like think like what was it like before we hired a bunch of women? But you pointed out, I mean, there's never been a TYT without women. Like even like Anna's been here for forever, but even before Anna, there was Jill. Right. There was Zara as well. That was before my time, but
yeah. That's true. I don't know that we ever did
just
a single
one show.
Maybe
the first one, I guess.
No, the first one was produced by Zara.
Oh, okay.
And so yeah, I'm not sure there's ever been a single TYT show not in some way produced or assisting.
Featuring.
Yeah, I mean, Jill Pike would help produce the show, so almost always produced by at least one woman. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Congratulations to you guys. Hiring enough women. Pat on the back.
We're awesome. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. Okay.
I can tell if he's being sarcastic.
Okay.
I think he was.
By the way, in the post game today that John and I will do, I will tell you an inappropriate story I considered for today that John talked me out of.
Thank God.
TYT Network.
He saw reason.
TYTNetwork.com/join to become a member and find out how inappropriate I am. Okay, Steve O, our own Steve O, writes in, not a fan of Cenk's t-shirt and suit jacket look, but John looks good though. So that's basically, since
I was worried for a second, thank you.
Yeah. So since we're basically wearing the same shirt, that's just Steve's way of saying Cenk is uglier than John.
I went into the bathroom and I put on a suit jacket over and I was like, I don't know. It's red and it's like a black suit jacket. It looked okay. I think it looks fine together.
What do I know? All right.
This is too much red. This is too much. Like, I want to show support, but I don't look good in red, not with my skin tone. I look like I'm bleeding. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway.
Actually, you kind of do. That's true. Miss McHugh says, I wonder if Ken Bone is wearing his red sweater in solidarity today. That's really funny. Hashtag TYT Live. To talk to us on Twitter during the live show. And then finally, Stephen Scales, Republican role, make as much money for your donors as possible. Democratic role, take this cash, shut up, look the other way. That about summarizes it.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, we got more stories for you guys.
Let's okay, see. Back to the healthcare. Yesterday, Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz got in trouble for his comments about poorer Americans possibly losing access to their healthcare. And it actually got worse for him today. But in case you missed that, here is his original comments.
Americans have choices, and they've got to make a choice. And so maybe rather than getting that new iPhone that they just love and they want to go spend hundreds of dollars on that, maybe they should invest it in their own healthcare. They've got to make those decisions themselves.
This is supposed to be a smarter Republican. Like, you have the moronic pundits saying, oh, how can you complain about being poor if you have a microwave? How can you complain about being poor if you can wash your clothes? But he's saying it during a policy discussion, which seems a little bit stupid, a little bit ridiculous. We're going to have more from him. But the reason it got worse for him is that he's making the comparison specifically with an iPhone. Now, that's ridiculous, as you pointed out yesterday. Chemo costs a little bit more than an iPhone. If you break a leg, it costs more than an iPhone. In fact, in a lot of hospitals, you cannot get a Band-Aid applied without paying more than most iPhones. But it turns out he's also a massive hypocrite, because FEC filings show that Chaffetz's donors not only pay his campaign's Verizon bills, his phone bills, which cost between $400 and $515 every month. That's an iPhone every month, but also on at least one occasion for his Apple electronics themselves. If you bring up this, we've got one of the bills of sale. They spent over $700 at the Apple store, which seems short-sighted, because what if he gets sick soon? They already spent the money. But it turns out it's actually even worse than that, because since 2014, the Friends of Jason Chaffetz Committee has filed more than 20 expenditures for Verizon Wireless for a total of $11,000. 700 more were spent by the committee on two iPads back 2 years ago, and they've spent $3,000 at Apple stores. So all of this, his devices, his access to the internet and communication, in addition to, of course, his government paid for healthcare, totally free for Jason Chaffetz, a guy who is just concerned about choice and making the right choices.
So Lee Fong from The Intercept originally broke this story, and it's a wonderful little story about hypocrisy. So as he tells you, just make choices. He never had to make a single choice because of Friends of Jason Chaffetz. Now, that's not his friends like, oh, the guy I grew up with, the guy down the street. Those are all rich Republican donors, including multinational corporations like Pfizer. So he helps healthcare companies, they help him, they pay for his iPhone, and then he turns around and says to you, why don't you just get rid of your iPhone so that you can pay healthcare companies more money?
There's every chance in the world that Verizon is a friend of Jason Chaffetz. We should look that up. I do want to play his second clip here, though, because I think it makes the hypocrisy look even worse.
People need to make a conscious choice, and I believe in self-reliance, and they're going to have to make those decisions. Sometimes you got to make some decisions in your life and where to make those investments in your healthcare. And as an adult, you get to make those decisions and live by those consequences.
It's just about freedom. You get to make those decisions. Maybe you can pay for the illness you have. Maybe you can't. Aren't decisions great to be able to make?
This is why people hate politicians. So as he lectures you there, hey, as an adult, you know, there are consequences for your decisions. But Jason Chaffetz doesn't have to make any decisions. He's like, hey, look at that. My iPhone's free. My Verizon bill's free. My healthcare is free. Everything's free for me because I have rich donors. See, I don't have to be an adult. I just have to be their boy. So if I'm just their errand boy and I say, yes, Mr. Donor, yes, what would you like? You'd like me to get rid of Obamacare? And so that saves the rich $600 billion in taxes. And it saves the bottom 90% absolutely $0 in taxes. She's like, I can do that for you. I can do that. Can you please pay my Verizon bill? I'm making choices. I made a choice to be up your ass. And so I'm Jason Chaffetz. For the rest of you, okay. Hey, man, get rid of your phone. Get rid of your microwave. Be an adult.
Yeah. Imagine being lectured to about making choices by a guy whose phone is paid for, his office is paid for, his housing in a lot of cases is paid for, his suit is paid for, his underwear likely bought by donors telling you about what you might have to do if your kid gets cancer. But as bad as Jason Chaffetz's comments are, other Republicans have been using arguments to push for their repeal, their alternative to the Affordable Care Act, that remind me a lot of the way Republicans used to talk about healthcare before there was the Affordable Care Act. When they were still pretending that someday they'd have a plan and, oh, you know, it's too bad that people are dying in the streets. They used some arguments that were not as subtle as the things we grew accustomed to during the ACA battle, during the last 8 years. So here we're gonna play Mick Mulvaney. Let's bring this up.
What's your range of estimate of how many fewer people will have health insurance?
Yeah, we're looking at it a different way, Mark, because insurance is not really the end goal here, is it? It's one of the conservatives, one of the Republicans' complaints about the Affordable Care Act from the very beginning. It was a great way to get insurance and a lousy way to actually be able to go to the doctor. So we're choosing instead to look at what we think is more important to ordinary people. Can they afford to go to the doctor? And we're absolutely convinced it will be more possible for more people to get better care at the doctor under this plan than it was under Obamacare.
What does that even mean?
So as you pointed out this morning, John, in our production meeting, if you're a progressive, it actually does mean something. So why are we, and Hank Thompson, some great tweets, as you were saying in the, last night about this. So why are we paying for the middleman, health insurance, if we just want the health care? So if you did universal health care, then you wouldn't pay the middleman and you get rid of health insurance and you wouldn't be having that conversation. You'd just be talking about getting great care from your doctor. But that is not the conservative position. They hate that position. They like health insurance, private health insurance. They insist on it. So that's why we're talking about it, Mick Mulvaney, because you made us talk about it. So now your alternative is, okay, I'm not giving you a public option. I'm not giving you universal health care. I'm not giving you anything. So your two choices now are either you are rich enough to afford the insurance or you're not.
Yeah.
And then, if you're rich, well, you've got the best doctors and everything's taken care of. And if you're not, that's a sad day for you because you're not a Republican donor.
Yeah, over the last 8 years, they kept criticizing the ACA, saying like, oh, look at how this is inconvenient for people and we're going to make it better. But now they've gone back to, hey, so when asked the question, well, aren't you worried about people losing access to their health insurance? That's just one perspective on the problem. We're worried about quality. Like, that's their pivot. We're worried people are going to die in the streets. Don't worry about that. We think we have something better. Even though Trump, of course, promised that everyone would be covered. They'd get everything. Let's go to Representative Meadows, because there's no better example of them going back to the arguments of a decade ago than what you're going to see in this clip.
Everybody has access to, but not, you can't guarantee that everybody will have coverage.
Well, I mean, we got 318 million people. We're certainly wanting, the goal is to ensure or allow access to all of it. There's a federal law right now that if you show up at a hospital, you get coverage, Allison. And so, you know, it's a false narrative to suggest that we have people who can't go in and get coverage. It's a federal law.
It's the same thing they were saying, both politicians and pundits. You've got an emergency room, what do you need it for? He said, ensure or have access to. Access to just means that theoretically, if you ever had money, then you could then get health insurance.
No, that statement actually made me angry as the wall. And I want to understand what he just did to you right there. He just spit in your face. And if you can't afford insurance, he might have condemned you and your family. to possible bankruptcy or literally in this case death. So when he says you can go to an emergency room, a lot of people think, wait, in my lifetime, when do I go to the emergency room? I twist my ankle or I break my arm, I go to the emergency room. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, we could just go to the emergency room. Now, wait a minute. If you don't have insurance, and they're saying, yeah, millions of people won't have insurance anymore. When you go to the emergency room, something as simple as breaking your arm could cost you $17,000.
Yeah.
Gone. It's you. Which
your
families?
Family's done.
Do you know that 75% of Americans have a $700 would bankrupt them? Okay, yeah, a $700 swing.
They can't take a $700 hit.
That's right. That's three quarters of Americans. So every emergency room visit is at least 10x of that, right? Maybe if you're in a rural place, it's only 4x of that. Okay, it will bankrupt you. And he goes, yes. Yeah, so what? If you're not rich, you're gonna get bankrupted. So what? You can go to the emergency room and go ahead, destroy your family's finances. And secondly, okay, that's the good news. That's the lesser of the two problems. The other problem is, okay, you got cancer. You can't get chemo treatments. You can't get regular treatments at the emergency room. You know when you show up at the emergency room if you've got cancer? When you're about to die. Because you never got the treatment in the first place. Then yeah, well, I guess, and by the way, you'll bankrupt your family in the process. You'll show up, they'll treat you while you die, then you'll pass away, and then they'll send the multi-$1,000 bill to your house and bankrupt your family. And jerks like this will come out there and go, well, you had access to healthcare.
Have they never heard of chronic conditions? Like you pointed out, of course, you're never going to detect the cancer if you're not getting the routine screenings and all that. That's obvious. What if we start to reach a position where a lot of Americans have ongoing cardiovascular problems? What if we ever have that country, America? What if people need insulin? What if they need prescription drugs? I've read about these. They exist. Someone might need them. It turns out you can't just go to the emergency room every week. They're pretending that they've never heard of healthcare or how it works or how sickness works.
Well, look, you elect Republicans, this is what you get. You get Chaffetz telling you about, oh, be an adult and make choices. Just give up your iPhone and you'll be fine. You get Mulvaney telling you, yeah, of course, no, we were lying. We're not going to cover everybody and they're not going to get everything unless they're rich. Okay, and then you've got this Meadows guy comes out and laughs at you and goes, yeah, why don't you just go to the emergency room right before you die? Ha ha, problem solved. You're not one of my donors and I'm done with you. So, okay, there are consequences. So next time you're in a voting booth, you think about pulling that lever for a Republican. Know that, hey, if I'm not his donor, I'm maybe literally dead to him. Couldn't care less about me. Okay, we got two more stories for you guys.
Yes. The new Secretary of Transportation was talking about how we're going to raise the massive amount of money that we're going to need for the infrastructure spending boom that Donald Trump has implied that we're going to get. I mean, we're talking about numbers of well over $1 trillion. That's going to require some fundraising. Now, wait until you find out who's going to pay for it. Let's listen.
So maybe if I'm hearing you properly, maybe what you're saying is that, for example, if a company were to rebuild a road, they might get their investment back by, say, having a toll on that road. And this way the taxpayers don't pay a penny. They make a profit. It's a win-win, something like that.
Yeah, thank you for putting it that way.
Yes, thank you for putting it that way. I'm not sure he knows what a win-win is. I'm also not sure what the taxpayer doesn't pay anything means when tolls. Who pays tolls again?
I'm pretty sure it's us.
Yeah. Is it spirits? No, you pay the tolls. You pay the tolls. It's about as regressive a way as is possible to raise money for a project.
So
it's an individual toll.
So when Trump said, hey, we should spend $1 trillion on infrastructure, I applauded it. That's actually a progressive position. And in fact, we have to spend about $3.7 trillion to fix all the roads and bridges in the country. We do that over a course of years, and it does create a lot of jobs. So, hey, I'm an open-minded guy. I don't oppose Trump because he did something to my family and it's personal. I don't know the guy from Adam. All I care about is what is he doing and what are the consequences of his decisions. So, then you find out, oh, he's just kidding. So first off, they're going to have private companies do it. Now that makes sense. If you're building a bridge or a highway, you hire a private construction company and the taxpayers pay for it, but it stimulates the economy, it creates jobs, mm-hmm. and it allows transportation, which also helps the economy, which creates more jobs. It has a good virtuous cycle, right? And he says, nah, we're gonna let the private guys pay for it, and then they gotta make their money back. Well, that's true. So they're gonna make their money back by doing these tolls. What does that mean? That means we pay for it anyway, but who pays? It's a regressive tax. So if you're using the roads and you're an average guy and you gotta get to work, you pay. You pay every single day for the rest of your life. You will pay that toll to that private construction company, which, by the way, is guaranteed to be a Republican donor.
And guaranteed to be incredibly profitable. It's not like, oh, we're gonna set up tolls until you get paid back for what you spent on the road. No, you will then have that for decades upon decades.
Now, if the government paid for it, that's taxpayers, but that's all the taxpayers, including the rich, including multinational corporations. When you say the government, the federal government does not pay for it, you take out the corporations, they don't pay a dime. You take out the really rich, they pay just as much as you guys do, but they have all the money in the world. So that tax is super regressive. It is a much higher percentage of your income than it is if David Koch takes that road or George Soros takes that road. It's a tiny fraction that toll that he pays of his income. Normally, if you take it out of the federal government, we pay proportionately. Not if it's a toll. If it's a toll, you pay disproportionately for the rest of your life. Yeah. So it turns out it's, as with everything with Trump, a giant scam. It's to help his friends in construction that he's known for a long time. It's to help Republican donors who get those projects. And it's to milk you for the rest of your life. And then to make sure that whatever is spent is not spent by the rich and is not spent by corporations.
Yeah. And let's just in advance, let's not be surprised if they end up not just allowing the private companies to do this work, pay for it, and then they get leases for decades to do tolls. This sounds like a way that a businessman like Trump might allow for the selling off of these things, privatization of roads and bridges on a mass scale. We already see that a lot in America, but it could become bigger. But I do want to play these next two videos because JR found something pretty funny here. So let's roll this next one.
Of our nation to improve our infrastructure is so great that the federal government cannot assume the cost for all of it. So it behooves us as a nation to address the deteriorating infrastructure by thinking about new and innovative ways in which we can fund our infrastructure.
Explain how that works, though.
Yeah, I will. So basically, we allow different kinds of money, private sector money, to come into the United States, I'm not saying foreign, to come and fund, let's say, a bridge or a road, or it can be any kind of infrastructure. We allow private sector money to come into the United States. I'm not saying foreign.
She's not saying it.
She's saying foreign. But by the way, I did a segment when she was first made transportation secretary. I was like, well, that's interesting. You know, she keeps going back to the transportation department, Elaine Chao, in different Republican administrations. She's also married to Mitch McConnell. Like, why is she obsessed with transportation? Okay. No, but honestly, like, what, is that a thing?
I haven't really thought about it.
Yeah. You know why? I did research on it. Her father is an incredibly rich Taiwanese businessman who's made his fortune in transportation.
Huh.
And so when she says, oh, we allow foreign, I mean, I didn't say foreign money in in contracts that goes to giant transportation companies. I didn't say foreign. I don't know. I don't know if the Chow family gets rich off this too. I know that her immediate family through Mitch McConnell is getting rich off the donors to begin with. But here's who's not getting rich off this plan. You guys.
Yeah. That was a final moment. We're going to have to look for that, okay? I mean, the problem is, look, $3.7 trillion, if it's anything like that, it's the same thing that we were worried about with HUD. There are going to be such huge amounts of money being thrown around. Even if a small percentage of it goes to corruption, just to paying off their friends and all that, you're talking about an amount of money that we maybe in the New Deal this stuff is going on. Other than that, we have not seen anything like that in this country for decades. It's going to be amazing, and Carson and her are going to be in charge of it. Anyway, are we going to push through the last story?
Yeah, last.
Okay, I figured you would. A government watchdog group noticed a surprising change to the mission statement for an organization within the EPA, and it's one that might come with some consequences. So if we can bring this up, you're going to see the original mission statement on the left, the new one on the right. And you want to pay attention to that top part where it says that the OST, that's the Office of Science and Technology, is responsible for developing sound science-based standards. You'll notice that over on the right-hand side, the new side, there are no references to science there. But there's a reference to OST also develops national economically and technologically achievable performance standards. Now that may sound good, it might even sound a little bit sciencey, but it doesn't mean the same thing. Now for this context, understand that the OST, amongst other things, has historically been in charge of developing clean water standards for states. But if this is the approach that they're going to take for the OST, if this is something that starts to filter throughout the EPA, there is a major difference between science-based standards and economically achievable standards. One takes what scientists say and directs the agency to make sure that we're comporting with it. The other says, well, we can install a thing. Maybe there's a piece of technology, or we should look at something if it's economically feasible. Will this perhaps not cost too much? Will this not harm businesses too much? That is a very different stance for the EPA to take.
Three parts of this. One is it's called the Office of Science and Technology, and they took out the part about science.
They left technology.
Okay.
And I'm merciful.
Second of all, when they say technologically and economically viable, basically, what they're saying is we're going to make decisions on whether we're going to do these or clean up things based on whether we think it's economically viable for the companies.
Yeah.
In fact, that leads to point number three. Pruitt, who is now the head of the EPA, comes and gives a speech to the staff for his first speech. Does not mention public health once. This is the Environmental Protection Agency charged with protecting the public health. Doesn't mention it. Then he talks about stakeholders. Now that makes sense. So if you're in charge of an agency, you should care about the public. That should be your number one priority. But you also have to consider other stakeholders, businesses, because you don't want regulations that are too burdensome, etc. And then there are other stakeholders as well. Among the stakeholders he listed, he did not include environmentalists at the Environmental Protection Agency.
So well, soon they're going to remove the word environmental.
And so you understand the priorities now. They literally, how many times did we tell you guys on this show? They don't like science. Science involves facts. They like alternative facts. They like propaganda. Facts are bothersome to them. Facts are that climate change is real. It's man-made. We're depleting the ozone. That is affecting our temperature. It's having these devastating consequences. When the facts are inconvenient, you just leave them out. Yeah. When science is inconvenient, you just leave them out. That's who these guys are. So if you're an anti-science baboon and you think, oh no, me no like science, me no like facts, then great, vote Republican the rest of your life. Okay? If you like science, well, the Republican Party is not for you. They just told you.
Yeah.
They literally took out science from the Office of Science and Technology. Ooh, me no like science.
Scary machines. Can you give me an indication? Do we have the video that we're supposed to toss to available? Because we're going to go to our break, but there's something we're supposed to play. Do we have it? I don't see a finger. I'm not sure.
Well, you're going to see a finger one way.
Perhaps we can. Perhaps we can do it in the break in the middle of in the next hour.
No, the Malala Fund. You guys
do we have
that?
Yeah.
Oh, we have it, right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So let me explain. So look, today I'll do it. Okay. Okay. Today, in honor of International Women's Day, we are running free Planned Parenthood ads throughout the show. But now, in between the 2 hours, we're going to run a video about the Malala Fund. And so, in fact, Malala was the first ever winner of the Turk of the Year Award. She took a bullet for, literally in her case, for education, for advancement. And then she set up a fund that at the local, national, and international level, raises resources for policy changes that ensure girls get an education for 12 years, complete 12 years of school. So Malala Yousafzai is, you know, one of the one of my role models. She's much, much younger than I am. Mm-hmm. But the courage that she has, the wisdom that she has to do, not only to take her suffering, the Taliban shot her in the head. She survived, obviously. And to face off with them and to make sure women get an education anyway, I can't say enough great things about her. So that's the video you're about to see. Let's watch.